gentlemen, you are welcome to Elsinore. Your hands, come then. That bird, tenants of welcome, is fashion and ceremony. Let me comply with you in this garb, lest my extent to the players, which I tell you must show fairly outwards, should more appear like entertainment than yours. You are welcome, but my uncle, father, and aunt, mother are deceived. Shannon Camp.
I'm Zach Powers.
And this is Stage of Fools,
the unofficial Royals podcast.
Today we'll be discussing Season 2, Episode 2, Welcome is Fashion and Ceremony.
Liam and Jasper's quest for vengeance comes to a halt as they discover that on the night of Simon's attack, Cyrus was being treated for testicular cancer. Cyrus, adorned with an allegedly cursed diamond, attends the first day of the parliamentary session while using the tradition of playfully kidnapping a member of parliament to get back at Holloway for talking to Liam. Helena discovers the Prime Minister dead. Eleanor grows closer to Beck as she attends a yacht party, where she encourages Liam to give up on revenge and find something that truly makes him happy instead.
Well, dear listeners, I'm so excited to introduce today's guest, our first returning guest, and definitely one I've been excited about having back on the show. It's our good friend, Sammy Campbell.
Hi.
Yay. I feel like after that introduction, we needed like an applause track or something.
Yeah, or some kind of musical interlude. I don't know.
We're very excited to have you back. As our listeners may remember from last time, you are a self-professed queen of trashy TV.
Yes.
And we always love to have an expert in the house.
This was a good one. This was a banger.
Yeah. This one was even more full of crazy stuff than I remembered. I remember the cursed diamond, but a lot of the other stuff I thought happened later in the season.
This is like arguably a Hall of Fame episode in terms of the pure amount of debauchery and terrible puns that are crammed into a single hour of television.
It might be the most we've done so far in terms of just absurd, off-the-wall, nutty stuff occurring at an unstoppable rate.
Well, I believe this is the first but not last appearance of Cyrus's little sex cage, as I call it.
I really thought that showed up later in the season, too. I was very shocked to see it so soon.
Let's just take a moment to appreciate that we have the chance that the show gives us opportunities to say phrases like sex cage totally unironically.
Well, and I would like to point out that the sex cage is something that I almost forgot about because there are so many other things going on. So
it starts out on a jaunty note, I guess, with Jasper and Liam, because they're best buds now, they're BFFs. And Liam is incredulous that Jasper is actually an American, does not believe in his American accent, and by contrast offers his own take on an American accent. And it's a moment between buddies staking out their murderous uncle.
I have many things to say about this scene. Like, already, first scene, I have a million opinions. Mm-hmm. I loved this scene. I thought that William Moseley, who played Liam, played it really well, because I didn't even realize it till the second time I watched the scene. But he's being genuine that he thinks his American accent is good. Like, he's playing it like, he's not playing it like Liam thinks he's making a joke. Like, after he's done doing his ridiculous, like, "I'm Frank Gallagher from Chicago. I got a pick-it-up truck." He's like laughing at Jasper after he's like, "You, an American." Like, ha ha ha. So I think we've said before that, you know, Liam can be funny when he gets the chance to be funny, which comes so rarely. And it was very, very, very welcome in this episode.
Yeah, I found Liam really charming in this scene.
One of the best ones he's had maybe in the entire series so far in terms of actually being kind of funny.
I would say this scene and the scene where he sings "I Just Can't Wait to Be King" from The Lion King at karaoke are easily his two standout moments of the series.
But yeah, it is a fun little scene. And the guy who plays Jasper, we have established at this point, is in fact actually a British person, right?
No, he's actually an American.
Oh, okay.
You got it 100% wrong.
No, all right. Well, no research, 2016, so.
The Vegas backstory seems to be correct based on what we know about him so far.
The character, the actor.
Tom Austin. I thought you meant Jasper, the character. Yes, Tom. No. Yeah. Tom, okay, here's the layers of this show, just the intricacies. Tom Austin, who plays Jasper, is British, but Jasper is only pretending to be British, and he's an American. So you have Tom Austin pretending to be an American, pretending to be a British person. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like a Russian nesting doll, basically, of accents.
It's a matryoshka of passable accents.
But they are in this car because they are staking out Cyrus, who's they see leaving some event, and Jasper is quick to point out that that is in fact not Cyrus, but his Saddam Hussein-esque body double.
Well, Cyrus is a dictator, as will be established later on this season when he starts like having members of the press arrested.
Sure, and in I think actually maybe even in the episode that Sammy did last time was the one where they established that Helena and possibly Eleanor also have body doubles?
So they follow his double into this building, It turns out to be a medical building, and they walk into the room, and Cyrus is... Okay, we have to talk about this moment, beat by beat. Okay. Cyrus is...
So first they come...
No. Let me say, because I have to tell you what I thought was happening when I first watched this scene. So they walk into the room, and Cyrus is laying in this glass tank. And when I first watched this episode, I didn't understand that it was a medical building and that this was a medical tank, because that wasn't necessarily made clear.
That at all. It doesn't seem like it.
When Jasper says this is double, and they walk in, and there's this, person sleeping in a tank, I was like, Cyrus has clones. Cyrus has clones. Like, that was my first honest-to-God instinct. I thought it was laying in a tank.
Boys from Brazil, that's what it's called. Situation.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's like out of Alien, basically. Like, there's just this weird tube, pneumatic tube, the person sleeping in it, and the lighting, I think, is intentionally, a little, it's overlit,
It's very sci-fi.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, yeah.
I really thought that
was his clone.
What next shit is E on? this is like cancer treatment from the future, spoiler a little bit, for the next 2 seconds. It is... I was like, is he in some kind of weird sensory deprivation tank? Is he secretly dead? I don't know. Is this because my first thought was is Cyrus dead too?
I assumed it was something incredibly sinister.
Like a Dorian Gray-esque way to retain your youth forever, maybe?
Like a Fountain of Youth situation. I wouldn't put it past this show.
But we learned that it's actually Cyrus in the greatest moment of TV blocking since the gong. Cyrus is laying in the tank, and Liam walks up to it, and then very, very abruptly, Cyrus, wakes up and looks at him through the glass of the tank. Like, 1 second his eyes are closed and he's totally horizontal, and the next he's up just a little bit looking at Liam, and it was an audible gasp moment when watching, it's alive.
It's very much intended to be a horror movie jump scare.
That's exactly it. But that's not just the editing. That's how the actor playing Cyrus plays that moment. Lifts up during that moment as if he's, revealing that he wasn't dead all along.
I think he calls Liam a Hardly Boy, which is amazing.
Yes, he says, nice work, Hardly Boy. He's the line. I also think it's worth noting that before entering the room with the tube... for no reason?
It's like a water slide piece, can I just say?
Yeah, it's amazing.
For no reason, Jasper offers Liam his gun, because these two are gun crazy these days, apparently. There's no reason to assume they're going to walk into this room and have to shoot Cyrus, on sight. But there's still a conversation about whether they should take out a gun. And it's very much, these two are not particularly good at being spies if their first response is always shoot it.
Yeah. Maybe even more than the season premiere, which I found really hard to deal with, I thought Jasper was just intolerable, like insufferable.
Yes.
He's so whiny, he's so mopey, he's so angsty and grumpy. Like, when he and Liam have that scene in the car and Liam's being really funny, Jasper is just like sitting there scowling his little face off, so cranky.
He could not
and
be
this whole
more
episode with all the pining and the angst, I'm just like, I cannot deal with this guy. He's horrible. He's not interesting at all. He's just cranky and mean and good at punching.
That's what Liam apparently needs right now, because they have become fast friends. That jump scare brings us to the opening title card, and when we come back, it's, unfortunately for us, a Beck and Eleanor scene, I believe.
Yes.
With Beck asleep on her couch, which he says he does to be honorable. It is slightly strange since they've had a pretty long relationship that has lasted a number of years. I guess, but whatever. I don't know.
So they hooked up while he was still with his wife, and that was fine. Mm-hmm. But now that he's left his wife for her, he's going to sleep on the couch because that's honorable. Even though they were sleeping in the same bed while he was married to another woman.
Yeah. And the couch is like half a couch size, so he is like curled up
it's
on
a
it
love
very
seat.
Awkwardly.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Is this the scene where she makes him put on all the different outfits?
Yes. And
yeah, I think so.
I hated this so much.
The last episode I watched, I was a little shady about the fashion. I was more impressed with the fashion in this episode. They obviously got a little bit more money for wardrobe. But especially the first shirt he puts on, which is like this like random like plaid short sleeve piece of crap. Like, Eleanor's like, oh, I bought you some clothes, and he's like, oh, you didn't have to do that. Like, she went to somewhere really expensive. It's like, clearly somebody like ran to Kohl's for 5 minutes and like picked anything that was like medium. And
they just got him a bunch of shirts that had really deep V's.
Yeah,
exactly. You know what I mean? Like, every shirt, he's wearing these polo shirts that are like unbuttoned way down on his sternum. He looks like he's about to go like clubbing in Prague.
Yeah, exactly. It's like either completely unbuttoned button-down shirt or, you know, really deep V. And it's so weird because he's trying on shirts and like trying to have this like emotional conversation with her, and Eleanor's just like, next shirt, next shirt, next
but
shirt.
But the show is doing this thing where it's like everything she says about the outfit, she's also saying in response to what he's saying. It's like every one of her comments has a double meaning.
Yeah.
So in theory, this conceit would work. In practice, they did a terrible job wording it, so it's like her answers don't really make sense for his words or for the outfit.
Right.
Like, he'll try on a shirt, and he'll be like, so I left her, and she'll be like, we can do better. And it's like, okay, I know you mean you and me and also the shirt, but it also, like, doesn't really fit 100% for either of those things.
Right.
It was a very Cyrus-esque read as Eleanor.
Right.
No, but, okay, on my part, I'm like, Cyrus would have come up with phrases that could actually
work
for both the shirt and that. Mm.
Exactly. And, like, the pacing was so weird because he would like, you know, give this little speech, you know, oh, I left her and I think it's the right thing, and then pause, change shirt.
You know what it reminds me of? There's a scene in the room where they're getting ready for a party and Lisa says something and then she'll like grab a bag of chips and put it on the table and then say something else.
Like,
it reminded me of that.
You can't talk and use props at the same time. I get it. It's really hard.
Yeah, it's one or the other. One or the other. I do want to point out a couple of the things about the scene. One, even though you noted that all the shirts are super generic and the first one's a dumb plaid shirt, according to Eleanor, they were all fine. So there you go.
I was just enjoying the show.
And during one of his little, you know, shirt speeches, he mentions something about seeing her at the funeral, which he implies was before Monaco. And this was a pet peeve of mine all the first season, introducing characters who should have been at Robert's funeral and weren't. But now they're retconning it so that Beck was at Robert's funeral, but he was definitely not there.
Well, there are two. Well, there are two things. One, we really didn't. Did we see Robert's actual funeral, or did we just see his wake, where he was laid out for state?
Maybe they just showed the wake.
They never showed his funeral or anything besides where his coffin was in the palace, I don't think. But the reason it doesn't work anyway, even though we never saw Robert's funeral, so arguably Beck could have been there, is because when Eleanor and him see each other in Monaco, they're like, oh, we haven't seen each other in years. So it's not like, oh, I saw you 3 weeks ago. Remember when we buried my brother, when we put him in the cold ground? Maybe you forgot.
Again. Remember that time is meaningless on this show, so that's potentially true. The funeral at that point was years ago.
Also, another thing about the fashion, I don't know if you noticed this, Sammy, but Eleanor is wearing like this black bra and black underwear to sleep in, which is fine, but then she wears it to the party as well, but she's wearing it like as a bikini. So I'm like, did you sleep in your bikini or are you swimming in your underwear?
Right,
it doesn't matter, like, but I was wondering, like,
yeah.
It seemed like super lazy costume design.
Or is he waking up? Because she walks into the bedroom. So, like, I was like, okay, did she wake up with her, like, hair styled and done? Or is this, like, she's wearing her swimsuit all morning and then just throwing on this, like, casual, like, tuxedo
statement necklace.
Dress and statement necklace. Yes, you gotta accessorize before you get fully clothed.
She put on the necklace first before she put on
and
her
she
clothes.
And she turns and she's like, what
you
do
know,
you
like
think,
all
darling?
Of us
like,
do.
Yeah, like,
what do you think of my necklace?
What do you think of my necklace? Or, you know, my super rocket body. Pick your pick. But yeah,
her body is insane.
Yeah. It was pretty much just like, we are fit. Everybody look at how fit we are for, you know, 10 minutes. And that's about it.
I think that's important to remember because all of the main characters, besides maybe you could make the argument for Simon, who of course is dead now, or maybe the original Penelope and the original Mirabelle aren't like skinny, but other than that, all of the main characters are very, very, very thin.
Yeah.
Which is a problem, but it's a bigger problem because every time a person who's not of that body type is on the show, they become a punching bag or like the butt of a joke, as we're about to see in this very episode. Like Zach and I have said before, like, this show has a real problem with fat phobic jokes and remarks. It's actually a little bit bizarre. It's like a grudge.
Particularly in that one episode where they did the tour of the poor people. But that's in the past. That was particularly egregious. But the next scene, I believe they cut back to Cyrus and Liam, where this is where Cyrus reveals the reason for his future tube, I'm just going to call it.
I have cancer.
Yeah.
That was a bad Cyrus impression, but the way he said it on the show was like the way you would say, like, you stepped on my foot. I have cancer.
Specifically testicular cancer.
Which he puts,
of course,
of the
because
balls.
It's the royals.
Yes.
Everyone calls it cancer of the balls. No one calls it testicular cancer on the show.
No, what happens is, I think Cyrus calls it cancer of the balls, and then Liam says testicular cancer, and Cyrus says something like, no, cancer of the balls of the liver. Yes, testicular cancer.
Yeah, something like that.
Oh, Cyrus
still
is my role model. I just love him so much.
He's so good.
When he lays into Liam, those scenes are always really fun because Liam is not a character I particularly dislike and want to see cut down, but he just has no wit.
Right.
So you know that it's going to be like all Cyrus just like slam dunking on him again and again and again.
Nothing but net.
Yeah, 100%.
But he reveals that, and I think the show is intends for us to believe that getting this treatment is where he was the night that Simon was stabbed. It's why he looked so crappy in the bunker the next day, because I guess, you know, cancer treatment obviously is pretty rough. And he wants to keep it a secret from everybody, specifically because, quote, he wants to keep it a secret from the people because, God forbid they look at me with sympathy or pity. People are such dicks. Is his exact reasoning. And he would rather be a reputed murderer than a victim. So
I want Cyrus to write a self-help book because I would like to live his lifestyle.
Yes. Or even just the actor who plays Cyrus. Yeah. I need to like find an interview with him or something.
Right.
I agree with Zach, though, that I think that the show is definitely trying to telegraph to us, the viewer, that this is true.
Right.
I mean, Cyrus was visibly like drenched in sweat and white faced, and like he looked like he was about to puke when they were down in the bunker, which obviously you could say like, yes, those are symptoms of guilt, but this was like an intensely noticeable physical situation. So now we know.
Yeah, I mean, I know even after this episode, when I was watching the second season through the first time, I held out a bit of hope that that wasn't true. I really wanted Cyrus to be the one who stabbed Simon, in part because I like the when the show keeps to the Hamlet parallels.
I was going to say the same thing.
But I think in this season in particular, they really run off the rails in that regard. So, unfortunately.
Well, we can talk about it a little bit now just because we know that it won't be the case. I don't think it's really a spoiler for season two. I mean, Zach and I have seen all of season two, and we do know who Simon's killer is. We won't reveal. But at this point, like we said, the show's made it clear to us that it wasn't Cyrus. He was kind of too obvious of a suspect all along.
Yeah.
But I agree. I wish that it had been Cyrus just because he's such a compelling character, and I would love to see like him like dealing with the fact that he did on some level love Simon. But the main reason I'm bitter that they didn't go down that route is because I've said all along that like the only time you're really getting a performance out of Elizabeth Hurley is when she's opposite Cyrus or opposite Joan Collins as her mother, the Grand Duchess Alexandra. And if they had gone down that route and done the Claudius Gertrude thing and had like Helena and Cyrus get married like as a political marriage just for power, that could have been a fascinating plot line, and it would have set up so many problems down the road.
Oh my God.
I just feel like that's a huge missed opportunity on the part of the show, and I would feel remiss not saying something.
They actually go in the opposite direction with this a little bit later in the season. But everybody loves to see Cyrus just go full-on villain.
Yes!
So why keep him from being full-on villain? But, unfortunately, yeah, Cyrus is out of the pool of suspects, unfortunately.
Well, there's still time, and the show's been renewed for season three. He could kill someone else.
Sure. I mean, he already kind of, like, he ordered Holloway killed, so there's that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, not we'll Holloway, whatever the name of Elizabeth Hurley's secret head lover. Alistair Lacey.
And I always remember that name because he was supposed to be a poor farm boy. And his name is Alistair Lacey.
Yeah.
So
parents
farm
were overcompensating, I guess.
Right. Okay.
The next note I have, and this is completely free of context, is a quote attributed to Jasper, which just is, "I get it. I screwed up." I felt like that was worth noting because it's always true about everything. But I don't know what context it was
there,
in.
Well,
I know
scene,
what it was.
Yeah. There's a scene where Jasper and Liam are hanging out, and Liam is just basically telling him what Cyrus has told him, and Jasper just decides that's the great time to just angst a bunch about Eleanor, and I found it so fucking boring. I'm glad they're friends, but I was like, this like sad boy brigade is not working for me. I can't.
Two things. First of all, I think what Jasper says, "I get it, I screwed up too," is Liam being like, "You slept with our mom." And Jasper's
"Well,
I didn't exactly sleep with her."
"We
know, you went down on her." Everyone remembers, Jasper. But my other thing is, I love the idea, it's not true, but I wish it were a plot point, that because Liam was so close with Marcus, but Liam recognizes, like, all commoners are homogenous to him. He's hanging out with Jasper, but he thinks he's hanging out with Marcus. Like, he doesn't recognize his bodyguard has changed. Like, he sees a guy in a black suit with an earpiece and sunglasses, mm-hmm. and he's like, "Hey, old buddy, old pal," because that's the level of closeness that he's showing to Jasper. It's like the show picked up all the development from his relationship with Marcus in season one, and since Marcus couldn't or wouldn't be on the show anymore, they were just like, well, let's just pretend that Jasper was a part of that. Fuck it, here we go.
Yeah, and they had to do something, I guess, with Jasper, because as much as we're not big Jasper fans on this here podcast, I suspect he is a hit with the
Teen girls.
Young lady audience.
He's a series regular. I don't really see that changing. And I think that they are going to eventually have him and Eleanor reconcile in a big way.
I assume so.
And probably end up together because we all know that like this, the show is the show is going for like this like misunderstood, torn asunder lovers situation. So
right. And they just handled it very poorly.
They probably had to figure out a way to keep him around so the audience wouldn't like forget about him.
Right.
Which can't say the same for poor Ophelia, but we'll get to her in the last moments of this episode.
Spoiler alert.
I'm laughing just thinking about it. I'm sorry.
That's a cliffhanger. So do not reveal to our audience what happens next.
No, but...
Yeah, with that cliffhanger, who knows?
I was about to say, even though Sammy has only seen one episode, I guarantee you she understood the cliffhanger and could tell exactly what was going on.
Yeah, I was like, ugh. God.
The first time I watched this episode,
Mr. Hill.
Really put that much stock into. I thought he'd be a pretty peripheral character, but he ends up later on in the season being more important than I would have anticipated.
Yeah.
He's sort of replacing Simon
a little bit,
not just in the show's narrative, but also like very purposely the show is supplanting him as someone who's going to be a father figure to Eleanor, like consciously on both of their parts.
I like him immediately.
I think like all the security guards on the show, he's a terrible bodyguard because even though two members of the royal family have just died, they let the kids do whatever
they want. Don't even get me started on the nonsense everyone is doing this episode. It's like
we'll get to something that Hill does in this episode that I think is a terrible decision, but I want to save that for a few scenes from now.
I'll rein it in for then too, because I have something to say about the world of this show that makes no sense to me, but. Go on.
He does, in a roundabout way, do the classic, he alludes to the classic, you could be great if you weren't so messed up, like talking about how drugs are common and you're anything but common and blah, blah, blah.
God forbid an episode go by without an older man shaming Eleanor for her choices. I mean, I'm not saying I'm pro her doing drugs all the time, but I am saying it's exhausting to have some man moralized to her every episode, and they always give the same speech. So I don't really know what the show is going for at this point. They never make an effect on her.
Yeah.
No. But I think the real point of this scene, more than anything, more than introducing James Hill, is that we learn that Beck's name is Lord Twisden Beckwith II, which is pretty ridiculous. I do just want to call him Twisden for the rest of the time he's on this show.
Yeah. Lord Twisden.
Yes, they... Lord Twisden. They kind of over-Britished it a little bit. I was like, okay, relax.
Yeah.
Relax.
That's what they're doing with the handsome blandlings because we had, you know, Alistair Lacey, and now we have Twisden Beckwith.
I guess it gives them a bit of... color.
Let's be honest. I think just the name Beck to start with was trying too hard to make it be like, all right, this is like.
Well, he looks like David Beckham already. He looks like David Beckham, I think.
He's
a bit with that like soccery physique.
Yes, very soccery.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
But that's all for that scene, because something very important is about to happen.
Oh my god, I'm so excited! I took a great
Please,
note
Sammy,
here.
Go ahead, Sammy.
We cut to a diamond on a pillow that Cyrus and Elizabeth Hurley are looking at. I don't remember her name. Helena.
You can call her Elizabeth Hurley if you want.
And Cyrus is basically like, I'm gonna wear it. And Elena's like, I don't think that's a good idea. I just to start off with, I have to point out, this episode has a cursed diamond subplot, but it is treated as if Cyrus is deciding to wear like a maybe not so advisable accessory. Like, it is not treated with any gravity at all. It's just like, Are you sure you're going to wear that?
There's
it's
a couple
cursed.
Of good lines. But...
It's like...
It really pays off at the end with like a dun-dun-dun moment.
Yeah, but like
that
throughout the episode, everybody's like, really? You're wearing that? You know it's cursed. Okay, you know, sure. Do you.
Like, there's one guy.
No, there's one guy who has the line, but the curse.
That guy's the best. There's an older guy, gentleman who's maybe a member of parliament who's like, but the curse.
Yeah, I actually thought he was like a groom or a valet or something. And he says to Cyrus's face, quote, but the curse. And I was just like, oh, why is but the curse not a quote in every single episode?
But in the scene, Helena introduces the idea very casually by when Cyrus says he's going to wear it. She's like, and what about the curse?
Yeah.
Very casual.
Yeah, it is a testament to how wonderful this show is that a cursed diamond is just treated like, eh, are you sure?
They even have a little, little backstory they give for it, which is, quote, he who wears the diamond will own the world, but also know its pain. Only God or a woman can wear it with impunity.
It's amazing. It's so good.
Sammy, I think we should adopt that for ourselves.
Yes.
Only God or a woman can do this thing.
With impunity.
That's fantastic.
Yes, it's amazing. And another thing is they're talking about they have to take a parliament member hostage, quote unquote, as a ceremony. And Cyrus goes, it's ceremonial. I hate ceremony, which I call so much bullshit. Shut the fuck
Liar.
Up, Cyrus.
Oh, yeah. He loves
you
it.
You love Cyrus... ceremony.
Oh, when he is dressed up in all that shit later, he is so happy.
Loving it.
It's well-established canon of the royals that Cyrus loves swords, would carry a sword at all times if he could, and dreams about murdering people with swords. He loves ceremony.
Every moment of this man's life is a ceremony by choice.
But I had to say, I thought it was so... I had to say this is like a common sense thing. So other people, like other members of parliament, are talking about the hostage thing. And they're talking about how, like, oh, I heard that last year you just got to sit there and eat snacks and it was really fun. I was like, well, guess what, bitches? Listen up. Last year, Simon was king. This year, Cyrus is king.
You should not be pumped
so,
right now.
No one should be,
how do you
no
think
one should be excited. Especially not Holloway.
That's going to go for
knows.
You.
Oh my god.
I feel like there's a big difference between how Simon would treat someone for like this fun little faux hazing tradition and how Cyrus would treat someone, and the fact that people who have like spent time with them don't have any recognition of that is hilarious to me. It's hilarious.
We asked way back when this episode aired, we asked Darren if this was real, and I can't remember the answer exactly, but I think something like it occurs during the first time the king visits Parliament in the year. But more importantly, Darren did give me an extremely important bit of trivia.
Let's hear it.
He sent me a link to a actual diamond called the Koh-i Noor.
What?
Which is a supposedly cursed diamond owned by the British Crown from India that only female monarchs ever wear.
What?
This diamond is 100% for real.
Of all the things on the royals to be grounded in reality, it wasn't how any part of life works. It was the fact that there's a cursed diamond and that only kings can eat swans.
Yes, that's true.
And people
I wish the listeners
home,
could see Sammy and I's faces.
Yes, that's what
Our mouths were open, like fully open.
Like, you guys have no idea how happy Zach just made us just now. Like, we were like, what? Like, this is the happiest I've been all week. This is great. I am so excited.
Yeah, so look that up. It's called the Koh-i Noor.
Koh-i-Noor. Oh my god. Ooh. The world is a beautiful place.
This episode is going to be 5 hours long because there's just so much to talk about this time.
I know.
This one's packed.
My next note is Kardashian lookalikes on the yacht. So fascinating stuff.
There is a classic Royals pun in the Diamond Seed where I believe I have H to C, which I believe means Helena to Cyrus.
Yeah.
Yes.
Refers to his first visit to Parliament as your coming out party, not that you needed it.
Yes.
So
bitch.
Elizabeth Hurley's not the best deliverer of lines, but it's a nice little Royals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She gets a and it's like a barely, it's a very barely kept secret that Cyrus is bisexual. Like, very loosely held, very loosely guarded, since he himself likes to talk about people's hard penises to their faces quite often.
That's true. Or their
and to their wives about their hard, or to their wives about how he's been having sex with
the
them.
The fact that his alibi for the night his brother was killed was
I was fucking
with
a man
instead of I was getting treatment for cancer.
That's so funny because usually it would be the other way around.
Right.
Yeah.
But nope, that's...
Beautiful.
So they pick the parliamentary hostage, and it's Holloway, who definitely shouldn't be psyched.
And he's so excited. I'm like, you dum-dum, how could you think that this was a coincidence? Obviously Cyrus is targeting you.
Yeah. And they bring him back to the palace, where, again, the maids, like...
Oh
the job description for these maids has to be maid / prostitute, right? Because
Cyrus,
they've never been treated as anything but. Yeah.
In season one, there used to be maids who were like normal, like middle-aged women or like men, male butlers or people dressed, you know, normally, not wearing sex slave costumes.
That was under the Simon regime.
That was
apparently.
Under the Simon regime, exactly. Under Cyrus, all like the normal looking background servants who Simon used to bump into in the kitchens and talk to, or they'd be in scenes, they've all disappeared to be replaced with all little Eastern European looking women who are wearing full on French maid costumes.
Oh my God.
The show makes it clear that the tops of their stockings, their thigh high stockings, are always visible.
Yes.
That's like the main direction that they had in mind. Like, let's shoot from beneath, right off of the skirt.
Yes. And there are about a million tart double entendres that none of them land in a charming way. Mm-hmm. You're like, gross, 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 ew, gross.
I think Cyrus calls Holloway a squawking tart.
Yes.
Which is, it just... But an especially weak display for Cyrus.
Yeah.
It's okay, because Cyrus makes one amazing pun in this scene, which is when he's having his guards drag Holloway away, he goes, Holloway.
Yes, it's incredible.
So good.
Where is he being dragged away to after being tempted with these tarts? He's
sex
being dragged
cage.
Away to Cyrus's personal sex cage.
Oh my God.
He does it. They don't show him having sex with anyone in the cage, but like, let's not pretend that the cage isn't there most of the time for sexual purposes.
Oh,
yes,
certainly.
Cyrus repurposed it for the ceremonial hostage taking, but like, that cage was there before, you know?
Yeah.
I mean,
you don't just have a cage. Like a human
It's even
cage.
Padded on the top, so you're clearly meant to sit atop the cage. While someone is inside.
Yeah. Yeah.
He also tells Holloway that he lined the cage with the newspapers.
If he needs
him.
To take a shit. That's what he says.
Yeah.
He tells him to aim for, I can't remember which...
The Daily Mail. Which is actually a really good burn because... Anywhere in the world, but especially in England, the Daily Mail is a total rag.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
It's like what Dethroned is basically based on in the world of the show. My face hurts from smiling after discussing the sex cage.
Oh my
yeah,
God.
The sex cage. That's like two in a row. Two scenes in a row, we get a cursed diamond immediately followed by a sex cage. What
so
a role.
Good.
I'm not sure the Royals has ever had a role quite as intense.
So good.
I'm getting high on it.
Yes.
Unfortunately, everything has to be ruined sometime. And in this case, it's by Liam's douchey friends.
Oh my God.
And
we're
throwing a yacht party.
We don't even meet all of them yet because the boy wearing the striped shirt with a cream colored blazer over it, mm-hmm. like he's like a background villain in Pretty in Pink,
right.
has a equally shitty twin brother who shows up later on in the season.
Yeah. But Ashok is also there, who's not too. I kind of like Ashok.
Yeah.
I was happy to see him. I missed him. It was kind of like a season one fun thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, the last time Sammy was here was the Masquerade. Great episode, and Ashok was definitely very funny in that. He had
right.
that bandana thing over his mouth, and he like was batting his eyelashes
oh
at Gemma,
mm-hmm.
whom I still miss, and she would have been amazing on this boat party, can
yes.
I just say.
Yes.
Yeah. And it wouldn't be Ashok if his friends weren't mercilessly harassing him.
Slash threatening him with bodily harm.
Threatening him with bodily harm.
Blazer Kid is threatening to shoot him in the leg with a flare gun. And yes, it's like barely a joke.
And somebody says, when he says something, I don't know, dumb or something, Liam's douchey friend says, "Somebody get me a bow and arrow."
Yep.
Man, they cannot let that bow and arrow incident go to bed. They are milking that thing so hard.
To be fair, we kind of, us three ourselves, belong to a friend group that likes to mercilessly milk inside jokes against people and That's take true. Them to their very, very outer limits.
Yeah. Mm.
Like having, I don't know, stickers custom made just to torture someone. I'm not maybe. Sure. I'm just spitballing yeah. here. So
custom made. I figured those were found.
Maybe this is maybe this is truer made. To life than we care to admit.
Yeah.
Can we just say? Yeah. There might be this may not be the most unrealistic / cruel thing in the world.
Yes. Sure.
Either that or we're figuring out something very dark about ourselves in this moment. But at least we've never threatened each other with bodily harm far.
Yeah. We haven't threatened anybody with a flare gun. But yeah, this yacht party is like, it's fine. You know, like, Jasper has a lot of moments of being boring. There's a lot of time spent on Jasper being boring and Liam being sad, which is, Eleanor's very charming throughout it. I don't know.
Here, however, is where James Hill does what I think is a terrible yes. mistake in his bodyguard duty. Yes.
Oh, it's not a question. It's a terrible mistake. Anyone can see that.
He specifically sets it up so Jasper and not himself is the person who goes onto the yacht with Eleanor and Liam to kind of be their bodyguard during this crazy yacht party.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do they make it clear how much he knows about Jasper at this time?
He knows that Jasper is obsessed with Eleanor because he's like, talks about him, Hill talks about noticing
okay.
Jasper watching her, and I'm like, and you see this as a positive thing?
Right.
Which brings me to what I wanted to talk about in the Liam and Jasper scene, and it's something that bothered me in the pilot, too. All men immediately sympathize with Jasper. It's like a sisterhood thing, but for men. Brotherhood, I guess is the word. But it's not something... But what I mean is with women, you'll like see this sort... No, I'm saying but with women, you'll see this sort of yeah. phenomenon yeah. in fiction. You don't see it a lot with men.
Right.
Which is that like every male character, upon meeting Jasper and hearing his story, immediately knows that he's trustworthy, immediately knows that he's not just the right person for Eleanor, but the best person for Eleanor,
right.
immediately thinks that he deserves to be with her, and immediately forgives him for all the, like, the wrongs that he's done. So Hill does the same thing, and it's like, I don't understand. They don't even right. have to have full-fledged conversations about it before men are like to Jasper, like, don't be the one who lets her down this time.
Yeah. Hang in there,
it's,
buddy.
It's just weird.
You know?
It's just like, weird. Ugh. I don't understand.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess you're probably the male character with the best view on this subject in the entire show is, I'm going to guess, Cyrus, who I'm sure does not give a single fuck at all.
Right.
No. Happens. No way. I mean, so... Hill says a lot of bullshit to Jasper while they're waiting to get on the boat. Jasper's all, like, super angsty and pouty because Beck is there. Mm-hmm. Hill mm-hmm. says no one will attack Eleanor because, oh, they're all on a boat. Who's going to attack her? And again, I was like, a man has died. Specifically, her father
two
is
have
a king.
Died.
I know
one of them died on a plane of some kind. Like, on a plane.
But it's heavily... But Robert, people think it was a military accident. With Simon, it's heavily suspected that someone inside the palace
right.
was the mm. one who killed him.
Right.
He was at large, yeah.
So that's complete bullshit. Also, Hill acts like only one of them needs to be on there. And again, I'm like, why? You got two members of the royal family. Why is two bodyguards unheard of?
Right.
I feel like they would probably, in real life, each have more than one bodyguard with
right.
them. So, whatever. It's just so that Eleanor can, you know... do drugs and dance unimpeded, I guess.
Yeah.
I like Hill, I guess, but he's like a nicer version of Ted in the sense that they are both, like, acting like security is their number one concern, but then things never actually play out at all. It's very, I don't even know what to make of it. It's bizarre.
I think they just wanted only young, sexy people on the boat. Like, to be honest.
Probably. Realistically, that's what the producers yeah. at E were like, we can't have an old guy running this sexy boat party. Right.
They have, like, a pen of extras in bikinis, and I'm not even using hyperbole, because they keep extras in literal pens. Right. So they have, like, this pen of naked girls, like, all right, let them out, get all the old gross people off the set.
Yeah.
Even though... Hill, of course, even though he's probably in his late 40s, early 50s, is gorgeous. Right. Like, can we just say he's super fit
Everybody's
and he's beautiful?
Like, very handsome. Yes.
Yeah.
We do. This is where we get our quick look at Cyrus and all his ceremonial guard
with
quote what's called the Great Sword of State.
Oh my god!
More accessories for him. And I love Cyrus in his king regalia that's so goddamn big.
He looks amazing. He looks like he should be the cover of a hip-hop album or something.
All of his splendor. It's so good. And he's got the cursed diamond just front and center right on his crown, like, fuck you guys, I'm wearing this cursed object. It's amazing.
This is definitely the scene where someone says, but the curse!
This is that scene, I think that's also the scene where Cyrus laments that we don't get to use swords anymore.
But this is not the first. This is not the first or last time he's expressed his love for murdering with swords.
Oh yeah, he almost killed.
He almost killed
his
Simon
own
with
a sword
while he was like tripping on some drug.
Yeah, he was like high on cocaine.
Oh,
I think.
God.
Yeah, that is his drug of choice, I think.
The other thing that gets established at this yacht party, in terms of establishing timeline, is that Jasper and Eleanor were apparently together for approximately 6 months. So another clue as to just how long.
They weren't. I'm sorry. I watched the first season. They were not together for 6 months. I watched the show, E.
God.
I watched your show. You made a show. You put it on television. You hoped no one would watch, but guess what? I did. So I know this isn't true.
The exact phrasing is that Jasper was Eleanor's bodyguard for 6 months.
No.
But they first have sex or don't. The night that he first signs on to be her bodyguard. So I assume
that's
the first episode takes place the day Jasper is hired.
That's true. He acted mousy for like 12 hours and then he had established his cover. Well, the reason that we hear this from Jasper is because sweet, stupid Thiswick or whatever his name is, Beck, goes...
Twiston.
What did I say? Thiswick.
Thistwick. Thrushcross.
Yeah.
Thrushcross Grange goes up to Jasper. Oh no, don't get me started on Wuthering Heights. Beck goes up to Jasper and tries to make like a friendly introduction, you know, hobnob with the common people.
Oh my god. Yep.
And Jasper just comes off as the world's biggest petulant asshole. Beck's like, oh, you were Eleanor's bodyguard, huh? That's a temporary job, you know, because she's such a handful. Like, just making pleasant conversation. Jasper's like, actually, I was her bodyguard for 6 months. And like, da-da-da-da-da-da. And like, clearly trying so hard to make Beck... jealous of like the connection that they had, but Beck is kind of just like la la la, whatever, do 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 do. Eleanor is good looking as me, don't have problems, la 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 la.
Like, yeah, he looks kind of threatened for like half a second, then kind of mopes to the side of the dance floor, and then Eleanor's just like, "Come dance with me, fuck off!" Like, and then he's over it, which is great. I love her for that.
Right.
The whole yacht scene is just Eleanor going around being like, "Stop moping." Stop moping, stop moping to like every man in her
life.
There
is like... also this rando woman who comes up to Jasper and just lays out like her really weird fantasy that she wants to do downstairs.
Yeah.
Well,
and he just...
she wants to do like rape play at gunpoint, basically.
Yes.
Like have him press a gun to her head and pretend to be forcing himself on her when he's not. Which of
Establishing...
course...
this is a real gun also.
Right.
Yes, but it plays into this whole thing that the Royals has been doing with Jasper all along, like this very gray area of consent where like it's technically consensual but has all the trappings of non-consensual sex.
Right.
And it's just, it's very confusing that E would continue to like keep bringing up this topic around Jasper and, like, attaching it to him. Mm-hmm. At the same time, they're trying to keep us from remembering that he and Eleanor began their quote-unquote relationship when he raped her, or at least told her that he raped her. And I know, yeah. I keep, every episode I'm like, I'm gonna stop talking about this, but it's crazy that the show has, you, does it make any sense what I'm saying? You know what I mean?
No,
that
absolutely.
Their selection to have this woman just come forward, a very strong approach to anybody, by the way, a complete stranger.
To say the least, to be like, I'd like you to pretend to rape me at gunpoint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The mind reels.
Like, it's the show's, like, you can't help, obviously, if you have something like that happen on the show, what are you going to think of? Like, what do they expect?
Yeah, I don't know.
But, I don't know. He, like, Sherlock Holmeses her real quick.
Oh my god, it's so painful and dumb. I just hate Jasper, I'm sorry.
No, yeah, he's the worst.
Yeah, if you've seen, like, the BBC Sherlock, it's like a light, poorly done version of what Benedict Cumberbatch does on that show.
Right.
Where he's like, you should have taken your wedding ring off before you spray tanned, because now I know you're married.
Aha!
Since when has a woman being married ever stopped him?
Right.
Helena was married to Simon.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I would be more... I would probably be more upset by the way that woman approached me than the fact that she was married, to be honest with you.
I would certainly hope so. But it's been well established that Jasper's problem is actually that he does have sex with married women, because that's where he ran into trouble with that gangster in Las Vegas, was when he slept with his wife. So,
yeah.
Not to mention the queen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I already brought her up. But, like, literally, Jasper's entire life, the events of his life have all been kicked off by sleeping with married women.
Right. Mm-hmm.
He came to England because he slept with a married woman, and then he got into the situation he currently is because he slept with a different married woman. So, whatever. I mean, I'm glad he didn't take this lady up on her offer, because that sounds kind of traumatizing for all involved.
Yeah, it does. Does that sound good? Yes.
I mean, I've seen a scene like that on TV, but it was in The Sopranos on HBO, which is an extremely dark show.
Yeah.
It's not comparable to The Royals in any way.
God.
On that show, that scene, which is between Richie and Janice Soprano, is all about, like, how miserable and fucked up they both are.
Right.
The Royals, I felt like, with this, almost played it for a laugh or, like, a sexy moment. It was truly strange.
Yeah, it was really, really weird. My next note is Oi with the panties, so it must have been a Helena scene.
Oh no, it's this scene.
Well, it's
God,
like
so much
scene
happened this episode that I forgot about this scene, but this scene is
this
crazy.
This scene is terrible.
This scene is terrible.
Yeah.
This is the fat phobia scene I was talking about.
Yes. So, after a brief discussion between Lucius and Rachel, where I think Rachel calls Lucius Sweet Lou, and they talk about if they're Team Helena or Team Cyrus. It's a weird little aside that doesn't matter.
That was a total viral marketing thing, like the Team Helena, Team Cyrus, Team Eleanor.
Implied hashtags.
Also, real quick, this whole episode, Rachel is wearing, like, a dirndl. She's wearing, like, she looks like she should be Maria von Trapp in The Sound of Music.
Exactly.
It's just very strange for a dominatrix. Anyway, carry on, Zach. Just had to throw that in there.
But Helena comes upon the Prime Minister, who is dead in his office.
From natural causes, supposedly.
From natural causes, it seems. The way he's slumped over his chair, she can see that he is wearing her panties. I'm not really sure where he got these.
She gave them to him and told him to wear them.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It was like
a
domination
thing. Previously on,
That's right. That was in last week's episode.
Oh, my God.
At the very least, this gives us another FML.
Yes.
So.
A man has died, but fuck my life.
Fuck my life. Yep.
So, this begins an unpleasant scene.
It's supposed to be physical comedy, but it is deeply, deeply troubling.
It's just uncomfortable.
So they have to remove she calls Rachel in, and they have to remove the underwear from the corpse.
Because
in
I guess
the most disgusting way, like, unsettling way possible.
He's, like, slumped frontwards over on a chair, like, with his stomach on the back of the chair, his body on the seat of it, So, you know, they kind of, like, loosen his pants and pull them down enough to kind of get in there. And then they are trying to, like, cut and pull off the underwear. Yeah. But emphasis on the pulling. They're like,
yeah.
If he were alive, he would be in a great deal of pain. I hope there was a stunt butt involved for the actor playing the prime minister. Because, and there, I feel like there were, like, sound effects. Maybe this was just my imagination of, like, squeeze.
You know? It's a lot of stretching and pulling it, like, up, upwards.
It's like an Even Stevens bit. I felt like I was watching some sort of Nickelodeon or Disney show just with the underwear thing. I mean, if you weren't dead, if you were, like, asleep.
It was just a nightmare.
Yeah.
It's like the Weekend at Bernie's of underwear, but it's disgusting. It's really bad.
It's really gross. Yeah.
And at every moment, this man's body is played for, like, as many laughs as possible. The fact that he's a little... He's a little more corpulent, you know?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's
and
just,
I think even
it's
that
bad.
Was probably part of the joke when they established the dominatrix stuff, too.
Yeah.
I know. Can you imagine someone unattractive having sex? Is that even allowed? Mm-hmm. Can't you be, like, put to death for that?
Yeah, it's this episode really has some highs and some lows, and this is one of the lows.
Oh my God.
Well, I feel high, so let's get to the lows.
And I, like...
On the plus side.
There's this great moment where the Helena turns to Rachel and goes, "I'm sorry, this must be the weirdest thing you've done ever." And Rachel goes, "Not even this week." And Helena just kind of rolls her eyes, and so did I, so...
Yeah. It's like, shut up, Rachel.
Like, shut the fuck
my
up.
My problem with Rachel is that she thinks she's so fucking cool.
She's
and I'm like,
far
okay.
Too pleased with herself.
Anyone can become a dominatrix.
Yeah.
Like, I can yell at someone too. Yeah. I know that's reductive of me, but you know what I mean. Rachel acts like she's like hot shit. Calling Lucius Sweet Lou,
oh,
like,
my God.
Excuse you.
She's far too pleased with herself, and I am not a fan. I was like, oh, shut up. And I'm glad Helena had the same reaction.
Well,
for once we take Helena's side.
Yes.
For once.
I guess on the plus side, Cyrus gets to open a bottle of champagne with a sword.
I love Cyrus so
that's
much.
Probably super hard. I'm going to say, like, I'll bet that is really hard to do. And he pulls it off like a champ.
Amazing.
So maybe he should have a sword all the time.
Yeah. Doesn't he go like, "I'm keeping this sword because I can do that now." He's like 5.
I wish it's he had that
great.
Sword in every scene for the rest of the series.
I really wish he would just brandish it at key moments.
Yeah,
just when he's making a speech.
Just,
to the public.
He just walks around with a sword like strapped to him, like just constantly. It would be
I really think it wouldn't feel like I would even need
God.
To suspend my disbelief. It would just be right.
It would be perfect.
He could order like different colored sheaths to go with all of his different, like,
and,
suits.
And, like, his patterned suits.
Great.
Yeah, it would be great. Oh,
mm-hmm.
My God.
Liam tells Eleanor that Cyrus probably didn't kill their dad.
To their almost disappointment, I would say.
Yeah.
They're both, like, a little bit like, "Aw, man."
And they have a classic Liam and Eleanor brother-sister moment at the yacht party.
Yep.
Where Eleanor kind of encourages Liam to... forget about this whole thing and go after something that makes him happy. We don't know what that might be. Yeah.
There's only one thing in this world that makes Liam happy, and it's, like, pretty young women encouraging him. And the most encouraging of those girls was Ophelia.
Most of this scene didn't work for me as much as the usual Eleanor-Liam brother-sister scenes do, and I'm not entirely sure why.
Mm-hmm. It's because we don't give a shit about their love lives.
Right.
Yeah, I guess that's probably it. But,
so it's more interesting for them to be talking about, like, their complicated relationship with their mother or, like, their past with Robert. As soon as Liam starts talking to Eleanor about giving Jasper another chance, or Eleanor starts talking to Liam about, like, finding happiness with a girl, I totally check out because it's just like, I don't care.
Yeah.
And you guys give each other shitty advice anyway because your love life is the least together part of your existence.
Right.
Yeah. But Ophelia, to his credit, it seems to cheer up Liam. And then they threaten Ashok with physical harm, and that cheers up Liam a little
bit. It's true.
So
yeah.
He's starting to feel a little better.
And he's like, I'm sorry I haven't been a great friend lately. I, you know, my dad
died. And my brother died.
But, you know, you should definitely shoot Ashok with a flare gun. We're buddies again. This is great.
His friend wearing the striped shirt and the blazer, who we see in a few other episodes, is basically like, if I found out that he was like Patrick Bateman style murdering prostitutes, I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Or that Aaron Eckhart movie about, I don't know, men taking advantage of women, whatever it's called. It's so terrible.
Every movie. That's what every movie is about. If you're watching it, if you're watching it the right way.
It's called In the Company of Men. There you go. We have to do, like, the next scene, I think, is Eleanor and Beck on their bed. Like, I don't know. And Beck's saying things. I don't know.
He's probably talking. Okay, here's the thing. He's talking to her more about her getting sober, which I actually am mostly fine with, because like I've said before, he's the only person who's taken like an actual productive approach to trying to get her help for her drug and alcohol problem by, you know, in Monaco, taking the drugs away from her. And what if I were Eleanor, I would have assumed that, okay, if I want to be with Beck and he doesn't want me to be on these hard drugs, like, it's going to be a deal breaker situation. Either I'm going to give up the drugs to be with him, or I'm going to have to give up on this relationship with him because I'd rather keep living this lifestyle. So she, you know, always acts very confused and indignant when he doesn't like her not being sober. And I'm like, I don't really know what you expected, because like, he's been, to Beck's credit, to Thisden Twinkle Fuck's credit, or whatever his name is, he's been pretty open the whole time about the fact that, you know, he has a problem with her addiction. So, yeah, I mean, I think the scene ends lovingly, and, like, they have boring, like, softly lit sex, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, I really don't know what Eleanor expected, that's all.
The Royals is always terrible when it's trying to do these sweet little moments that are monologues that are like
the romance is
my
always
arms,
the part.
My bed, my life kind
oh,
of moments.
God, no.
The absolute worst.
Stop it.
And Beck is kind of, and this is the mode Beck is kind of in this particular scene, in my opinion.
That's the only mode this character has.
Oh, yeah. Pretty much, yeah. I think that brings us to our patented Royals closing montage, though, if I'm not mistaken.
There's a real dun-dun-dun closing moment
related to the
cursed diamond.
Yes.
Yeah. Cyrus is putting away the cursed diamond, happy that nothing has happened. No, nothing has befallen him. Everything went just as planned. Yeah.
I don't believe in curses.
Right.
Uh-huh. And then an assistant enters the room and is like, your doctor needs to see you. And he just, like... has the most shocked look on his face as he looks down at the diamond.
And then, like it zooms in on the diamond as if the diamond's going to have, like, a reaction. It's amazing.
The diamond did it.
It's so good.
I truly believe that this moment is meant to establish that in the world of the Royals, magic is real.
Yeah,
that might be. There's more on that later. Don't worry, listeners of this show. If you came here for the sweet cursed diamond action, it is not over. There will be more cursed diamond in the future.
Hashtag cursed diamond watch 2016. Let's make a trend.
Cursed diamond is the bow and arrow of season 2, no doubt about it.
Yeah, Chekhov's cursed diamond.
Yes.
We get to see the new prime minister, I guess.
Who is wearing a super low-cut tank top and a mini skirt to her work as, like, vice prime minister.
Yes, my last note is there's a new bitch in town. Britain is now run by women in push-up bras with impeccably styled hair, and I am ready.
Yeah.
So those are the kind of notes that I take.
And Cyrus, yes. No, you summed it up perfectly.
Yeah.
And another quick shout-out to our producer, Darren, who has noted to me that the parliamentary succession for the prime minister in this episode is completely incorrect.
Of course.
Surprise, surprise.
There is no deputy PM fixed into law, and and it needs to be... it's an appointed position, so this succession would not work in the slightest.
I mean, in terms of showing how any kind of government works, like, Parks and Recreation is a far more realistic show than The Royals.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, this is no...
And that show exists in, like, a cartoonish reality, but
right.
Whatever.
You're saying, yeah. It doesn't have the political accuracy of, say, a Wire season 3 or something like that. No, not quite as astute.
I can't believe we managed to bring up both The Sopranos and The Wire on our show about the Royals in a single episode. That pretty much is it, well, though, right?
There is one big cliffhanger.
How could I forget?
You see Liam coming down a hallway.
How could I forget?
Oh, God. It's so... because it's nothing.
He approaches a door, knocks on it. We cut to a shot of Liam's face as the door opens. And he begins to smile. Cut to black. End of episode.
The Royals.
The dopiest smile of all time.
Oh my God.
So bad. And like, obviously it's Ophelia. They were hitting us over the head with it all episode. Eleanor is like,
so hard.
Last season, you were so happy. What was the thing that made you happy? I don't know. What was the only plot point Liam had besides avenging his brother? Oh, being with Ophelia. He had two plots, right?
Not to mention, she's the biggest major character who has been completely absent for the first two episodes. It's, like, inevitable she's going to show up at some point.
Yeah.
My favorite thing.
And Nick shows up with her. I'm so excited for next time.
We have to save it. We can't talk about that now. There's too much going on in this one. But my favorite thing was when this episode first aired. I saw it, I believe, the day it aired. And as soon as the episode ends, they do the next time on the Royals. And the first thing they showed was Ophelia opening the door. So it didn't matter.
Guys, good work.
Even E knew. It was like, all right, everybody knows.
That's like the polar opposite of like those super vague, next time on Mad Men, come in, take a seat, shut the door. You know, like his super vague, like, step into my office. What? Who called? What was that? Leave a message. Like, the Royals is like, here you go, guys. Take a look. Got any notes? We still have time to make changes. Anyway, before we get too carried away with all the fan fiction that we're writing right now, it's time for the best part of any episode of Stage of Fools. And we'll start with Sammy, since she's our honored guest. What was your favorite part of the episode?
I think my favorite part of the episode was, just because it was so ridiculous and weird, was Helena and the Prime Minister pass each other in the hallway, and Helena immediately says something like, oh, I could see your panty line, and he's all, and I'm just like, this show, it was just one of those moments, it's just like the entirety of the Royals like boiled down to like 2 seconds, and I was just like, we have the Queen of England saying something to the Prime Minister about wearing her panties.
Yeah.
It was just the best. My favorite.
All right, I'll let Zach go next.
God. There are contenders, mostly from the first half of this episode. I mean, you've got sex cages, you've got alien future tubes.
Future tubes.
That are somehow cancer treatments.
I guess I really do have to go with my gut and say, when they've super casually introduced the idea of a cursed diamond, that's my favorite.
Yeah.
That's great. It's just like, of course there is now a cursed diamond on
this
show.
That was a real of course situation.
Yeah.
I mean,
so I gotta go with that.
Some episodes I feel like I'm like scraping the bottom of the barrel for a favorite moment, whereas this time it was more like an embarrassment of riches.
Yeah.
And there were so many great Cyrus moments, but there's always great Cyrus moments when Cyrus is around. So I'm going to say right off the top of the episode, Liam's his American accent. What was the name of the character he came up with? Ed Gallagher? It was Frank Gallagher, because I was thinking of Frank Abagnale Jr. from Catch Me If You Can when he was doing that.
Okay. Because he's such a good con artist with that American accent, probably, is what you're thinking.
I liked how Jasper wasn't amused by it at all, but Liam didn't know that he wasn't doing a good job. He thought he was doing, like, a perfect American accent.
And he looked...
And of course, like, if the listeners couldn't tell from my grating nasal Midwestern accent, I'm actually from Chicago. So his, I'm from Chicago, I got a pick-it up truck, was really enjoyable.
There's a nice little capper on it where he, like, looks into, like, he, like, completely stops thinking about Jasper at all and looks into the, like, distance and is like, Frank Gallagher from Chicago. And it's clear he's daydreaming about the life he would have if he were Frank Gallagher from Chicago.
I know. It's like a Simon's fisherman thing. But it's so funny because I can't undersell or oversell Jasper's reactions, like how his total unamusement really makes the scene that much funnier. I'm from Chicago. No, you're not.
No, you're not.
Like, okay, like, we get it, Jasper. He knows he's not really from Chicago.
It's amazing.
Anyway, yeah, that's definitely, I'm still going to give Liam's top moment for me ever as being I Just Can't Wait to Be King at karaoke, mm-hmm. but this was easily a top two moment it's for him.
Yep.
Yeah. Unfortunately, next episode may be dire times for Liam because we're back with Ophelia for at least an episode, but we'll see how that goes.
All the more reason for our listeners to tune in next week, I guess. Mm-hmm. But before we say our goodbyes, I did want to talk about one other thing really quickly. It feels a little bit funny just because we've been, you know, laughing so hard and having so much fun this episode. But I do want to get serious for just a minute. So Zach, Sammy, and I are all involved with the fan community for the podcast, the Flophouse Podcast, which is hosted by Dan McCoy, Elliot Kalin, and Stuart Wellington. And I've been working with them to set up a fundraiser for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. We're doing a drive to raise donations for the foundation. We have a $10,000 goal that we passed 75% on today. So if you feel compelled to donate to this great cause, the link will be up on all of our various social media pages, mm-hmm. and it will be in the show notes for this episode. All donations will be matched, so even if you only want to give a very small amount, you're really doing twice that amount of good. And if you're also a fan of the Flophouse, as I'm guessing quite a few people who listen to this show are, if you do a non-anonymous donation, then your name will be entered in to win a great prize, which is The Flophouse is a Bad Movie Podcast, and you'll get to pick one of the bad movies that the hosts will do an episode on. So you'll basically get to have your own episode in your honor of this very prolific podcast, a very popular show. So thanks so much. We'd really appreciate it if you go look at the page.
If you are a little short, but you have money coming in the near future, you could donate up until March 18th.
Yes. Plenty of time.
Yeah.
Plenty of time. Just, no rush. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, thanks so much, guys. And
and if I could have one last thing
to direct
our viewers to Sammy, our guest. We mentioned it last time. Has a newsletter.
And it's so good.
Yeah, if you want to give him the name there, Sammy, just a quick plug for you.
It's my newsletter is called Highly Illogical. You can find it on tinyletter.com/SpockGirl, SpockGrrl. I will also pass on the link to you guys so that you can put it in the show notes and stuff like that. But it is biweekly, and it's just a fun piece of writing that I do, kind of a little love letter to everybody. And it has ghost stories and other ridiculousness, so it's fun.
Cursed diamonds, maybe?
Maybe there will be a cursed diamond tie-in.
Now we found out that there is a real cursed diamond in the British royal family.
That might actually be a feature, so we'll see.
Jumping off point.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for joining us this time, Sammy. It was so much fun having you back for such a great episode.
I feel so honored to be here for this episode. I think I sent you a text, Shannon, that was like, I'm watching the episode right now. Bless you and your podcast.
Yeah. It's true. She did.
Yes.
It's true. Well,
thank you. You guys are doing the Lord's work with this show.
We're doing Jake Maskell's work.
Yes.
He is our Lord now.
Yep.
Same difference.
Yep.
All right. Well, thanks again for listening. For all of us here at Stage of Fools, I'm Shannon Camp.
I'm Zach Powers.
Have a great night. Bye.
Bye.
visit Stage of Fools on our Twitter at Stage of Fools Pod or on our Facebook page, Stage of Fools. The Royals is property of E. Stage of Fools is produced by Darren Husted, artwork by Joshua Hollis.